Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. On the two podcasts this week, I'll have joining me as my special guest expert, Mr. Larry Reed. Mr. Reed is the president for the Foundation of Economic Education. It's always a pleasure to have him on the program. And on today's podcast, I will be asking a very interesting question. Is Donald Trump right? Is Donald Trump right? He said this past week that the unemployment rate is actually 18% and that you cannot believe the government's estimate as to what the actual unemployment rate is. I will on today's program be talking about that and offer you some additional evidence and let you see for yourself if Mr. Trump might be right. And on the second podcast this week, I'll be talking about sovereign debt. What happens when governments borrow more money than they can pay back? How might you be affected? And what does it mean for your money? What strategies might you consider? I'll be talking about that on the second podcast this week. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Larry Reed. Larry is president of the Foundation for Economic Education, and he is the best economic historian that I think I have ever interviewed. And Larry, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Larry, for our listeners that may not have caught the last time we talked, explain what the Foundation for Economic Education is and does, if you would.
Okay, I'd be happy to. The Foundation for Economic Education, or FEE as we call it for short, is an educational organization. Our focus is on young people primarily between the ages of 14 and 26, but lots of people at all ages appreciate what we do. And our mission is to educate and inspire people in ideas of individual liberty, free markets, the things that we think made America great, including personal character. And everything we do is highlighted on our website, which is FEE.org.
I would encourage the listeners to go check out the organization and, if so inclined, support their work. I'm a big fan. And incidentally, I believe Jeffrey Tucker is on your board, and he has been a frequent guest here on the program. So nice to connect the dots there as well.
He's on our staff, actually, and is one of the most prolific people we have.
Yeah, we've enjoyed our conversations with him as well. So, Larry, speaking of prolific, you're a busy author, and you wrote a piece recently titled, How Do You Say Deja Vu All Over Again in Chinese? Talk about the premise of that article.
Okay. Well, I wrote this shortly after the headlines in the American press about the big stock crash in China. And that crash began in June in a big way. And in fact, after a short respite, it seems to have resumed again. So China's stock market is now collapsing substantially. It's down about 35% in just 6 weeks. And the premise of that article is that these things, stock crashes in particular, tend to follow monetary policy. And in China, which is no different than the U.S. in this sense, you've had an extended period of easy money, artificially low interest rates, a lot of government pump priming that produced a bubble. And now, in the wake of some tightening of monetary policy, that bubble is bursting. And the big question is, how bad is it going to get in China? Is this the start of a recession or depression? And could it be anything like what followed our big one in the 1930s? And so I went on in that article to talk about if China does all the dumb things that the U.S. did after its stock crash of 1929, then in fact it may see an extended period of a slump or worse.
Well, Larry, certainly it's interesting you bring up the fact that these bubbles seem to build as a result of monetary policy. We often talk here on the program that if you create money, it's going to find a home, and typically wherever it finds that home, you see asset price bubbles. Let me ask you, for our listeners maybe that aren't as familiar as you with some of the policy responses after the stock market crash in 1929. Explain some of the dumb things policy-wise that were done here in the United States.
Okay. between 1924 and late 28, we had a very substantial increase in the money and credit supply. That fostered the Roaring Twenties. But then when the Fed, or the Federal Reserve, tightened monetary policy, and that was evident in the first half of 29, then they set us up for the fall, the collapse in the stock market. But if nothing else had happened, you might have expected 1930 to be a year of recovery, and it would have gone down in history as maybe just like the 1921 crash, which was very short in duration. But the problem was it lasted for another dozen years, and that's because of this long roster of dumb things. In 1930, the Congress and the administration under President Hoover decided to try to go after the rising unemployment by imposing sky-high tariffs on foreign imports. They passed the Smoot-Hawley tariff law, which virtually closed the borders. So any industry that was dependent for its livelihood on the import or export business really got flattened hard. And foreigners responded. They said, if you're going to raise your tariffs on our stuff, we're going to retaliate, and we're going to raise tariffs on your stuff. So we had a worldwide trade war that took unemployment that was about 8.5% in the spring of 30 and made it twice that within a year. So, but then on top of that, in 1932, the Congress doubled the income tax. In fact, the top rate was even more than doubled. It was raised from 24 to 65%. So in the midst of a depression, you have this sky-high increase in taxes. And then Roosevelt comes into office and prolongs the depression for another 7 years with all kinds of interventions. If you have time, I'd be happy to talk about some of those too.
Would love to do that. And Larry, one thing that, and for our listeners maybe that are just joining us, we're chatting with Mr. Larry Reed, who is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. The website is fee.org. I would encourage you to check it out. Larry, when you look at what's going on worldwide now with the central banks around the world pursuing loose money policies and actually just printing money, are we witnessing really the modern-day version of what happened in the 30s, but instead of using tariffs, we're seeing the devaluation of currency?
Well, certainly monetary policy is very similar to what we saw in the 1920s. In response to a serious crisis that started in 2008, the Federal Reserve has been ever since massively pumping the economy with easy money. Now, a lot of that has stayed in the banks, improving their balance sheets, and hasn't worked its way out into the general circulation yet. If and when it does, you'll start to see prices rising across the board. But we're still pumping ourselves into another bubble with this easy money. And what the Fed or Federal Reserve is hoping is that at some point, when we start to see signs of that bubble in the form of price inflation or whatever, then they'll nip it in the bud by reversing policy and raising interest rates. The question is, these people at the Fed, their timing has always been awful. What makes us think that they're going to be any better at it this next time? But each time we respond to difficulties in the economy by trying to goose it up with easy money, it's sort of like going to the drunk who's just beginning to pay for the previous night's binge, and we say, well, we're going to help you out. Here's another bottle. It only prolongs the problem. It puts off the day of reckoning and probably makes it more painful when it does happen.
Well, that's perfect timing. We're going to have to leave it there. I'll continue my conversation with Mr. Larry Reed, president of the Foundation for Economic Education, on our second podcast this week. In this segment, I want to ask a question that many of you will find to be provocative, maybe even a little bit alarming. And that question is simply, could Donald Trump actually be right? Maybe some of you watched the debates this past week in which I think there were 17 Republican presidential candidates that debated. And let me be clear as I go through this conversation that I am not taking a position politically. The actions of today's politicians in Washington on both sides of the aisle, frankly, don't excite me very much. But I thought it'd be interesting to ask the question, could Donald Trump actually be right, at least on one issue? Now, on February 6, Forbes published an article, and I'm going to give you just a bit from the article. It said, after Donald Trump announced his latest bid for the presidency, I reached out to get details on Trump's plan to replace Obamacare, and posted that interview on Forbes last week. But for many Forbes readers, the most eye-catching part of the interview wasn't Trump's plan for health care. It was what the Trump campaign said about unemployment. A campaign spokesperson told the Forbes reporter, Mr. Trump believes the real unemployment rate is over 18%, not the reported 5.5%. Now, Trump's distrust of government statistics isn't new. In July, he suggested the U.S. unemployment rate could be even higher than 18%. The reporter continued, even if you don't agree with Trump's position, he's getting at an important issue. The official unemployment rate may be at 5.3% as of June, but the percentage of underemployed Americans is significantly higher. This is where an alternate measure of unemployment called the U6 measure for where it shows up on the monthly jobs report can be illuminating. And according to the most recent U6 rate, about 10.5% of Americans are unemployed or underemployed. Now, if you're not familiar with the terms U3 and U6, the U3 unemployment rate is the official unemployment rate. That's the 5.3% rate as of June. The U6 rate includes a couple groups of folks that the U3 rate does not include. One of those groups is part-time workers who want to work full-time. These are folks that have to settle for a part-time job because they can't find full-time work, and part-time work is defined very loosely. If you worked even a half a day in the last couple of weeks, you are not unemployed, you're working. There's also another group of folks included in the U6 calculation called marginally attached workers. These are people who are not actively looking for work, but who have indicated they want a job and have looked for work without success sometime in the past 12 months. This class also includes discouraged workers who have completely given up on finding a job because they feel they just won't find one. So those two groups of folks are not included in the U3 calculation, but they are included in the U6 calculation, which is officially 10.5%. Now, there is an economist by the name of John Williams, who runs a website called Shadow Government Statistics. The website is shadowstats.com. And Mr. Williams tracks economic data using methodologies that used to be used by the government. I'll give you just a bit from his website as it relates to unemployment. He says the seasonally adjusted SGS alternate unemployment rate reflects current unemployment reporting methodology adjusted for shadow government statistics, as Mr. Williams' organization, estimated long-term discouraged workers who were defined out of official existence in 1994. So back in 1994, because government leaders didn't like the unemployment numbers, they simply changed the way the unemployment rate was calculated. Similar things have happened with the money supply and the inflation rate, but time will not permit me to discuss those in this segment. Well, if you go back, according to Mr. Williams' calculations, and you calculate the unemployment rate as it would have been calculated pre-1994, Mr. Williams estimates that the real unemployment rate for June is 23.1% when you put all the long-term discouraged workers back into the equation. If that's true, maybe Mr. Trump is right. Now, U.S. News and World Report published an article back on July the 16th that talked about another measure of employment. The article said there are more job openings available in America today than at any point since the Bureau of Labor Statistics first started tracking vacancy data back in December of 2000. Yet the percentage of adult Americans working or actively looking for work for a job stands at 62.6%, the lowest level in nearly four decades. So the labor force participation rate, 62.6%. Well, ultimately, when you look at the labor force participation rate, I should say, in the context of where is it at now compared to where has it been different points historically, the country's labor force participation rate, which incidentally measures the share of Americans at least 16 years old who are either employed or actively looking for work, it's now at a 38-year low. Again, 62.6%. So there's some evidence that Mr. Trump may indeed be correct. In fact, when one looks at what happened in July and looks at the level of layoffs, there was an article published on MSN that was titled, U.S. Job Layoffs Reach Highest Level in 4 Years. I'll give you just a bit from that article. Challenger Gray and Christmas has released its monthly job cuts for July, and it is, in a word, ugly. The 105,696,000 job cuts, 105,696 job cuts, was the highest number since 2011. To put this in perspective, the July job cuts total is a whopping 136% higher than the 44,842 job cuts reported in June, as well as 125% higher than in the same period a year ago. The July report showed that the last time more than 100,000 job cuts were announced was back in September of 2011, when there were some 115,730 layoffs. Another bad trend is that July's surge now brings the year-to-date job cuts up to a total of 393,368. That is 34% higher than the run rate for the same period in 2014, just 1 year ago. Also, this is the highest seventh-month total since 2009, and that was effectively before the jobs recovery started in the recession. Now, where did the job cuts come from? Well, job cut announcements came from the likes of Microsoft via the Nokia division. Sounds pretty unlikely. Qualcomm and Intel. All in all, computer and electronics firms announced 18,891 job cuts in the month of July alone. That, roughly speaking, is about 17 to 18% of all job cuts came from the technology sector. Other sectors in which jobs were cut, surprisingly, energy, the second highest sector. Technology was one, energy was two, followed by financial, retail, education, and transportation. Here's my point. We believe that we are in an economic winter season. During an economic winter season, debt has to be purged from the system. Debt in the system rises to reach its level of capacity before the debt accumulation trend reverses, and debt has to be purged from the system, and that leads to some economic symptoms. Unemployment is one. We believe that the likelihood is high, depending on Fed policy response also, for stocks to be affected by this deflationary trend environment. If you'd like another perspective on this, why not order our free Investors Discovery Kit? You can get your free Investors Discovery Kit by visiting the website investingapproach.com. The website again, investingapproach.com. And if you'd like, you can also sign up for our free weekly newsletter titled Portfolio Watch. If you'd like to receive that, all you need to do is visit the website Your Retirement Outlook. Give us your email and we'll be glad to put you on our distribution list. We never share your information. Again, to get the free newsletter, YourRetirementOutlook.com is the website. That concludes this podcast. Hope you got something you can use. Bye.